here again with the Blitz, the podcast from the Green Zone. Jamie Nye and Britton Gray getting ready for week 8 of CFL action as the Rough Riders end the first third of the season with a 5-1 record. Pretty well right where we thought they'd be, actually, Britton, I think. Like when we looked at the schedule, it was like around 4-2, 5-1 for the first third of the season. So on pace for those 13 wins, right?
Maybe not the loss we expected them to have when we looked at the schedule to begin the season. But yeah, 5-1, about where we're expecting them. And funnily enough, now this might not be a good omen, but it's following the same sort of thing as last season. 4-0 start, first loss, bounce back. They move to 5-1. It's identical starts to last year, but unfortunately, we know how the second third of this season went for this team.
Why do you got to do that? We're feeling good. 5-1 game. We did the confidence index on the Green Zone. People are still thinking of a great cup, and you keep on bringing back old times. This is old history. It's not 2024 all over again. It's not we're going to 7-game winless streak. They play the Edmonton Elks on Friday. They'll go to 6-1, and then what? To recalibrate all your this is exactly like last year's stuff.
I think they're a better team than last year. I think they're more equipped to bounce back more, but I'm just saying it's some weird similarities.
Well, there was a game against the Edmonton Elks around this time last year too that we'll talk about that a little bit later on here on the Blitz podcast. But of course, we want to start with your questions. As always, send them to at Jamie Nye, at Britton Gray during the week. Comment on the YouTube channel as well. And we will try to get to your questions here on the Blitz podcast because you have some dandies for us each and every week for the questions. So, Britton, where do you want to start off for the questions? Oh, Gov.
Mm-hmm.
People know Gov around these parts. But when Collins and Johnson are both healthy, what do you see as the optimal lineup on the left side between them, Washington, and Zach Fry? Okay, so this is offensive line. Of course, Collins is out. Daniel Johnson is out. Zach Fry's now out all of a sudden this week. That came down Wednesday in a surprise. Like, what did he got hurt during practice or something like that? So we'll talk about what all that rejigging, but the optimal lineup. See, I thought the optimal lineup would be Fry, Ferland, and actually Trevion Tate at left tackle is what I thought the optimal lineup would be for the Rough Riders.
Yeah,
but apparently not, because they opened the season and it was Peyton Collins on that side, but though, you know, Brammer wasn't in there. Then they kept Tate at guard. And they had Daniel Johnson play well at tackle. So that's a great question, Gov. I don't know anymore what their optimal lineup is on the offensive line.
The optimal lineup would have included Sean McEwen and Philippe Gagnon. Well, that was the optimal lineup, but yeah.
The optimal lineup, you're right. It's Sean McEwen at center, Logan Ferland at guard, and then Brammer, Trevion Tate at left tackle, and Jamarcus Hardrick at right tackle. There's the optimal lineup. You nailed it. But Sean McEwen's out for the season, so that's not going to happen.
I think, I don't know. Darius Washington played, I thought, pretty well in his first game. Peyton Collins also played very well in his first game. I think having Daniel Johnson, that Canadian left tackle, I really like them having that and continuing to see his growth because he's a young guy. He's a guy who you could maybe see playing that tackle spot as a Canadian for a long time. And that's kind of where I'm like, I lean to having Daniel Johnson there and then Trevion Tate, Washington Collins at the guard position, maybe. But Zach Fries looked good. Like that's the issue with this conversation about optimal, is that a lot of it has to deal with what are you building towards, because Zach Fries young, Darius Washington's young, Daniel Johnson's young, Peyton Collins is young. You want to build an offensive line to last you the next decade, and those are four guys who I think have bright futures if they continue to improve on what they've shown so far.
Exactly. And that, so Sean McEwen and Philip Gagnon didn't help out at all with those injuries and training camp and things like that. But they've got depth when they're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think their optimal lineup is two Canadians on the offensive line. Like, I think they'd rather have more than that. But if all things being equal, I think they want Brammer and Hardrick and Trevion Tate, two tackles and a guard, with Logan Ferland and a Zach Fry right now. Although it would be, as we said, McEwen and Ferland would be more than ideal for the Rough Riders. So, but it's another injury this week. They're going to have to do some, who knows what the depth chart's going to look like as we record this before that comes out on Thursday morning. So, Gov, thanks for making us have a headache trying to figure out what the optimal lineup is. But does it really matter? Edwin Harrison, he's going to figure it out. He's going to figure it out. And they're just going to be fine with whatever they throw out there, apparently.
I asked Darius Washington that as a part of my player profile about what is it about this team and what they're doing that allows you, a new guy, to come in and find success. And he said it was the culture. You come in day one, you know your job, and you have to do it and be ready for it. That's a credit to Logan Ferland, a credit to Edwin Harrison, a credit to Jamarcus Hardrick for these young guys and getting them ready to be, when it's your chance, you're out there not just in a spot, you're out there performing well in that spot.
Right on. Gov, thanks for the question. Question number two. Adam, who's a player currently in NFL camp that if cut, you'd like to see on the green and white? Well, speaking of the offensive line, Kyle Hergel would be a guy, New Orleans Saints offensive lineman. Although with a new coaching staff there, he might get a good long look at potentially making the game day roster is what we're hearing from New Orleans out of early portions of camp. But that's the biggest name, right? Like, he was a first round pick. He's still in camp, and that would be a guy that would, you know, talk about optimal offensive line. I imagine Jeremy O'Day would dream of that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, I would lean Kyle Hergel as well. Just the depth's already being tested. You can never have too many good Canadian offensive linemen, and Kyle Hergel is getting center reps. That's where they're kind of have him in New Orleans. He's learning that position a little bit more, and I think, speaking of optimal lineups, optimal lineup would be having Logan Ferland at a guard and having more of a guy who's been at center for a little bit longer than Logan has. Oh, he's been great, taking nothing away from Logan Ferland, but even he said he still prefers to play guard than center, but whatever position's needed. But yeah, Kyle Hergel is the kind of the bright lights, the main one that we're all really familiar with. But there are guys who, and we can talk about it, the negotiation list is out. Now you can go take a look, finally, about time.
Yeah, Adam, actually, when we saw this question come in, I went to the negotiation list, which is now fully public. All 45 guys, it's on the CFL website. They update it daily because you can move guys in and out and everything else on a daily basis. It's a moving target on who's on the negotiation list. But, Adam, geek out if you want to. Go to CFL.ca, go to the negotiation list, and do your cross-references on who's in camp, who's not in camp, who hasn't got a job yet. And I was looking at all the defensive linemen because I think that is a spot where you look at and go, okay, is there that dynamic, absolute dude on the defensive line who's unblockable? Not yet in Saskatchewan. Malik Kearney had a great start to the season. They have a good group of rotational guys, but you know, Shane Ray hasn't really jumped off the page yet. They're all doing their job, but as big-time defensive line playmakers, you haven't seen it quite yet from that group. So I'm always looking at, you know, receivers, quarterbacks, and defensive linemen when it comes to that negotiation list, and that is a lot of what makes up those negotiation lists. And take an afternoon, go through it. That's what I did today. How many of these guys are at camps? There's a few defensive linemen who have been at camps who don't even have jobs yet this season, who are just sitting at home right now. Maybe one of those guys gets signed later on this season to come help, because they can. There is a portion when the practice roster is expanded in the CFL. So thank you to the Canadian Football League And finally, the board of governors and the general managers for accepting this and allowing this to happen. It was far too long where you can just make the negotiation list public in the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, I completely agree. About damn time.
And it's fun. It's great to go through it and go, okay, it does make NFL camp a little more interesting. It does for me. I'm going to be looking, going, okay, I've jotted down a few names out of like Brandon Smith and these guys, and okay, who's shaken free on cutdown day in the NFL? Who's on a rider's neg list? So we'll see where that goes, Adam.
And moving on, one more.
Okay. Have the discussions started about the future of the CFL that have been started by guys like Luke Wilson? That's two L's, by the way. Had any impact on the board level? Because ultimately, they are the ones that decide what happens. Guys like Doman want change, but others like Miller, Wade Miller in Winnipeg, do not. I don't know if they've even really had much of a board meeting since Luke Wilson. Like, I know they met last week. They meet, you know, once a month almost, have these board meetings, or if there's something urgent that needs to be taken care of. I don't think Luke Wilson has kicked the hornet's nest that much yet. And a lot of these conversations we're having, actually, with Luke Wilson, they're conversations the CFL board has had already. Like, these are already conversations that they've kicked around on, you know, negotiation lists, and they had the debate over the football operations cap. That's the one that I'd love to see, and a lot of fans and Luke Wilson would love to see, is take the handcuffs off football ops to help the product on the field. But and hey, Wade Miller should be fine with that. He's making more money than anybody else. That would be advantage to Wade Miller.
Yeah, no, I think the conversations, that's going to happen in the offseason. That's where those main ones are, about how to really help grow the game. And they need to happen. Let's be honest. Luke Wilson, as you mentioned, he kind of said things a certain way that got people more, I guess, combative about it and going at it. But we've talked about the Rouge before Luke Wilson came around. We've talked about the operations cap and things like that. There's other things, sure, he's maybe attempted to talk about that we didn't even consider stuff. And I know people want to always throw the NFL stuff back at him.
Yeah.
The four downs, you just want to be NFL. He doesn't want it to be the NFL, but you can look to the NFL for how to do things the right way. You don't have to take four downs, but how does the NFL market? How does the NFL do things a certain way as a business? And as you mentioned last time, out listening to Luke Wilson on the Paper Plates podcast there with them, really opened your eyes about where more he's coming from and what he just wants to see from the NFL or from the CFL.
Yeah, he wants to see a more prepped, more, you know, smooth product. He's on the 2-minute drill thing, or the 3-minute warning and end of games that don't have urgency. And I feel it too. Like, it is a lot of dink and dunk down the field. We have the ball, we have time, and you really get that urgency for a team with a minute left in the game, right? You know, that final 3 minutes, it kind of lollygags, and then maybe it's really crazy, and it can get crazy in the final minute. But it'll be interesting how to negotiate that, because you also don't want teams who have the lead and have the clock being able to be run down, and then you don't, like, right now, minute 40 left, you can kick the ball off and get the ball back with a minute left.
Yeah.
Good. But there's pros and cons to everything that have to be ironed out when you really get down to the crux of it. But I enjoy these conversations. I've been having them for a long time on the Green Zone. We've been having them since Mark Cohan really sparked this stuff. But remember, back in the day, Mark Cohan used to invite fans to suggest rule changes that they bring to the Board of Governors in the offseason. Like, this has been going on, and have had very, very lively conversations with fans about what changes they could see in the Canadian Football League. So, well, I think it will have an impact. I think, you know, that type of big voice lends itself to bigger conversations outside of local radio shows anyways. And that can grab the attention of, you know, Luke Wilson's former boss, Stuart Johnston, who's now the commissioner of the Canadian Football League.
Yeah.
Wouldn't, you know. So, thanks for the questions, as always. You can send those questions at Jamie and I, at Britton Gray, at Green Zone SK, and we'll try to get more of your questions on next week on the Blitz. But let's dig into it. It is week eight. The Riders are 5-1, and in come the 5-1 Edmonton Elks with a quarterback change on the horizon. Everybody and their dog is predicting that it'll be Cody Fajardo against the Rough Riders. For the first time, Fajardo, since he left in 2022 or after the 2022 season, he's never played the Riders. He's been on the sideline once in uniform, but never taken a snap. Wouldn't it be something, Britton, if that happens on Friday night?
It's going to be one of the weirdest returns ever by a player to a team he used to play for. And Cody Fajardo, there will be a Cody Fajardo era when you look back at the history of the Riders, what he did. There was the West Finals. They had a lot of success with Cody Fajardo and kind of a lot of things going on as well. It was a very interesting time to cover this team. But I'm curious about, A, the fan reaction, and just if there is that return stuff even for him, because it's been a few years. He's won a Grey Cup. He's a Grey Cup MVP. He's on his second team since leaving the Riders. But still, just another interesting kind of kernel of a storyline that we have this week.
Yeah, I'm really... Like, if this was 2023, and he was hurt that game, right? He never played in Regina. 2024, he was hurt again. He was on the sideline in Regina. But will there be the boos you would have heard that long ago? Or have people sucked it up, and it's water under the bridge, and okay, yeah, whatever? Or will there be a little bit more, like, finally we get to go up against Cody Fajardo, right? Finally we get to possibly do a Cody chant in the stadium when he's running out on the field. Or fans really, I some do and some don't. It'll be very, very, very interesting. If it is Cody Fajardo starting for the Edmonton Elks, what kind of reception he gets at Mosaic as a guy who's actually taking a snap in the football game.
Yeah, very intriguing. I don't even know if there would be boos. I think I recall a lot of people were happy Cody Fajardo went on and won a Grey Cup in Montreal, although I guess it helped that he did beat the Bombers to win that Grey Cup and kind of do that. But very fun stuff. Just, as I mentioned, there. Always interesting storylines in the CFL.
Do you think it's too early to give up on Trey Ford, though, in Edmonton? Like, are you surprised, especially against the Riders? Because they did come into Saskatchewan last year with Trey Ford, and the defense couldn't figure it out. So with that knowledge of last year's game and how much Trey Ford caused Corey Mace's defense issues, I'm going, wouldn't you want to throw that at him again to see what he's got?
I'm of two minds behind it, because I do think it's too early to give up on Trey Ford. If he's your guy, he's got to be your guy. But at the same time, as you've talked about on the Green Zone, I think you mentioned Dave Naylor brought it up, Cody Fajardo would have won the starting quarterback spot if it was an open competition. It just wasn't. They had to anoint Trey Ford because people wanted to allow Trey Ford to be given his opportunity finally, because he never felt like with Chris Jones there, he was given a fair shake. They just wanted to give him a fair shake. He took great steps forward, four steps back against the BC Lions. There's a lot of pressure to win now in Edmonton is the issue that's also working against him. That's an organization that needs wins. They're clamoring for wins. That fan base needs something to get excited about. And unfortunately, right now, Cody Fajardo is probably the better option to get you wins now and just allow Trey Ford another year. You need to develop. We need you better, because at the end of the day, it's professional football. You have to perform, and Trey Ford at certain games hasn't performed.
No, that's true. I'm just curious on... clearly what they're seeing is a more efficient quarterback in Cody Fajardo in practices, or this isn't a conversation, and it's still Trey Ford, and was and clearly a mistake to anoint him when he hasn't all like. He's an exciting player. He's one of the most exciting players to watch, and what he can do, you know, in a hot second, make a defender look absolutely silly. But as terms of efficiency and passing completion percentage and quick decision making, it wasn't there yet. So I agree that it felt almost like they were public relations wise pushed into a decision that maybe it would have been better to go, nope, he's got to win the job outright. We're not anointing anybody. And, but here comes Cody potentially with the Edmonton Elks against a Rough Riders team. And let's get into it. After a 33-27 win over the BC Lions, you saw a team with an incredible bounce back. After what happened against Calgary, that was the game the Saskatchewan Rough Riders needed to show, no, this isn't us having a, you know, settling back and having a slide. They punched back against the BC Lions and showed they don't have a glass jaw, as Corey Mace told you they're going to find out about after that Calgary loss.
I did quite enjoy this week how the biggest complaints a lot of people had was the Riders didn't win by more. How they'd wanted to see the team completely crush the Lions, which they probably should have. When you get out to a lead like that, it should be not close. But I've said the CFL game is made for comebacks. It's made for the end of the games for teams to make it closer. That's how it works. So I don't put too much into that. But this is a team you saw that bounce back. You saw the punch back. And you saw a complete game. It wasn't a game where it felt like the Lions just allowed the Riders to win. The Riders earned that win right from the get-go. And that's why I like this team this year. That's why I have them in the Grey Cup. This feels like that veteran, that team that knows what it takes to get it done, even when things maybe haven't gone your way.
Yeah, exactly. And depth wins. Darius Washington steps in a pinch. He had two practices for Daniel Johnson at left tackle. Played well. You're seeing the receiving corps. Sam Emilis jumps into the lineup, right? And, you know, that unfortunately takes Mitch Pickton out of the picture, but with Emilis and Myers and Johnson, you have it, and the way Robustelli is playing as well, that is a great receiving core that might get better if Kian Schaefer-Baker can battle back from his injury. So you saw it against the BC Lions, a very efficient Trevor Harris, a defense that can take the ball away. Brett Lawther made all his kicks.
Finally.
Yeah, they only won by six, though. So with a garbage touchdown late in the game, let's be honest. But there was those two drives that ended at about like the 45 and they elected to punt and kick the field goal. The back-to-back drives that ended in that territory. You get one more first down and it's 36. Another and it's 39. Like, had those opportunities and we're just like one play short of really driving that nail in the cup. But it's early. They're not going to be a perfect team. You don't want them to be a perfect team this early. Like, Britton's going to talk about the Stampeders in a little bit. Are they too hot too early? And will everybody catch them and pass them by the end of the season? Right? Yeah. Like, there's Corey Mace gave him a B. That's sure. Yeah, 5-1. You'd think, whoa, that's an A team. No. They're nowhere close to an A or A-plus yet. Caliber
quickly,
for the
Jamie. I want to get your thoughts in terms of the BC and BC being allowed to come back. What do you think about this team and their closer strategy of running the ball with Tommy Stevens at the end? Because they did it again for a second time this season, rolled Tommy Stevens out there and ran kind of the rush option.
Yeah, in that game though, like what was it? They were up by 16 or no, up by 15.
15,
sorry.
Yeah.
Like you're running the clock out. And Tommy Stevens averages 4.5 yards a carry. So 4.5 is 9. And you're taking hits away from Trevor Harris because you knew the BC Lions are going to be bringing it at Trevor. So I understood it. Like, I don't think we're going to see that in a 7-point game.
No, I don't think so either, especially not with the CFL clock and how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, I got it. I understood it because he's looking at the clock saying, no, if we get a first down here, it runs down and it's urgency. And that's we meant, like, BC scored with, what, 19 seconds left or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, it does get interesting on an onside kick, and then it would have been a Hail Mary type shot to try to win that game. But, yeah, I understand on what Corey Mace is going to do. I'm not too heavily critical on this whole put him away thing, because that's just a growth thing for this team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If they were blowing leads, it's an issue. But they haven't been. They are 5-1 after all. But another big injury, Kadeem Carey goes down in an ugly injury. TSN didn't have to show the replay. Guys, didn't have to do that to us. Didn't need to see the replay of that one on Kadeem Carey. So unfortunately, he's out, but Mario Anderson Jr. is back already. Britton, you talked to him. He didn't even unpack. He was kind of...
He was ready to go.
Ready to come back anyways. Yeah.
Yeah, and he brought his barber clippers this time around because he was actually working at the barber shop while he was back at home, also coaching running backs. But he was excited. He was watching the games. He said he was cheering the guys on. So glad to see him back. A great guy. And he's a guy who I wanted to see a little bit more from in the preseason because, boy, you look at his college tape. You look at what he did at Memphis. He is a talent at the running back position.
So Mario Anderson is good to go, but Zach Fry for this game coming up. I said it on the show, like, what is going on? Did someone break a mirror in the offensive line room? This is ridiculous. He was not on the injury report. Nothing wrong with Zach Fry at all on Tuesday. Nothing. Wasn't even mentioned. And then all of a sudden, Wednesday, limited, out, head injury. You have to think he either got injured or practice or mm-hmm. something else took place. But he was clearly practicing today, else they wouldn't have been limited. So here we go. I baffled on what the next move is here for the Rough Riders without left guard. Like, this was last week's depth chart?
Yeah.
So Noah Zaire comes on. You already got Washington, who is a late add because of Daniel Johnson's injury, the shoulder. He practiced in full and then didn't practice the rest of the week last week. So you have Zaire moves up to keep that ratio going because they are now at 7 starters on the Canadian side for the Riders. And then bring in Braden Knoll as the 6th. Or the other option Britton and I were talking about today, do you go 4 American offensive linemen to keep Zaire as your 6th guy and bring in Nick Jones and then bring Mitch Picton back in and take out Joe Robustelli? Like, could that be a move, Britton?
It's a possibility. That's why I brought it up, because Nick Jones at least has some CFL experience. He was here last year. He had to start a couple games because of injuries there. It's like I said, it depends what they want to do. And unfortunately, close practice didn't get any clue about what was going on along the offensive line. So, and I do lean that they'll just kind of bring Braden Knoll on and kind of keep it, because I assume, this is me making an assumption, that it's not a serious thing with Zach Fry, that it's just maybe a 1 week thing, and hopefully you get him back next time out. Then you don't have to mess around with the chemistry you're having with Joe Robustelli, or just this receiver room as a whole. You don't have to make a bunch of moves to kind of make it work. But it was weird. Like I said, I saw the injury report and I was like, Zach Fry out? What happened? I don't know. Might happen in practice. They did just do a walkthrough on day one, so maybe if they had did more than that, maybe he would have been limited that day as well. Tough to say, but this is the reality of the Riders. But as we've been saying, in Edwin Harrison, they trust, because he's done a bang-up job. No matter who's come in, has performed.
Yeah, there's no real other place where you can fit a Canadian other than receiver if you're going to flip the ratio on the offensive line. And I can't remember the last time we saw four American offensive linemen start for a CFL team. I'd be hard pressed to try to think of a time when that happened. That's one of the options. We're just throwing out options because this was a kind of a late curveball thrown for the Riders with Zach Fry's injury. But now you're looking at, on the left side, having Noah Zaire and a raw rookie on the left side of your offensive line. That's a little, I'm sorry, that's concerning. That's flat out concerning for the left side of that line.
Yeah.
Because the experience there is slim to none with those two guys.
Hey, they started 13 different offensive linemen last year. They're up to 9 right now. So, and that doesn't even include McEwen and Gagnon because they never started a game.
So, as we look at the depth chart, we'll see how it shakes out for the Riders and the Edmonton Elks. But are the Riders on notice here, Britton, with the Edmonton Elks coming in? Riders on notice? Because you almost picked them, Edmonton Elks, to beat the Riders.
They should be. Based on what happened last year, nothing is safe in the CFL. We thought the Riders were going to blow out the Elks last time out, and turned out the Elks blew out the Riders. There's a lot of weird things with the weird offensive line injury all of a sudden out of nowhere. Cody Fajardo or Trey Ford. It's a lot of variables and a desperate Elks team. As I just mentioned, this Elks team needs to win games. They need to. It's no longer you can find one here or there. They need to win games. And so I think it's going to be a close game here, closer than people might think.
We'll see about that. Okay, let's go around the CFL real quick before we get to our picks. And let's just keep it on all quarterbacks all the time. Comes to around the CFL. Drew Brown got hit. Mm-hmm. Should Deshaun Amos have been ejected automatically from that football game, Britton?
I think so. I think that was an ejectable offense. You're trying to keep the quarterbacks healthy. You're trying to get those hits out of the game. I do think he should have been ejected at that point. Just, I don't think it was malicious. I don't think he meant to injure Drew Brown, but you still have, it's about sending a message sometimes, and you have to send a message to other players that's not going to fly.
So Drew Brown, we'll see. There's some word that maybe it won't be that severe after their bye week for Ottawa, because they do go into bye week, that he might be back and not miss a lot of time, but things aren't going well for the Ottawa Redblacks, which brings us to Davis Alexander. He's out again, 6-game injured list. Jason Moss being very, very confrontational when it comes to any question about rushing Davis Alexander back. Though there are those who are criticizing, saying, should he have been in that game? And he said, all our doctors cleared him. No, he felt good, everything. So he defended that. He didn't want to go into much detail about Davis Alexander's injury. But they're perfect with him, and they're 0-2 without him. And he's on the 6th game. Riders play him next week. That's not good for the Montreal Alouettes, because McLeod Bethel-Thompson is not it for the Owls.
Yeah, not anymore. McLeod Bethel-Thompson definitely doesn't look like the player he used to be. And yeah, just the injuries. Something, speaking about the NFL and what they do, right? When there's injuries, you know about exactly what it is. It is out there, even if it is the star quarterback. Dak Prescott, it's hurt his ankle. He's out 8 to 12 weeks. You know that right away. And I think as fans and building the game, that's something fans want to know. They want to have that inside information and feel a part of the team and feel like that they know what's going on with the inner workings of the team. And betting. I get people hate betting sometimes. It is a segment of fans that the CFL is trying to engage with. This just helps them do that by having accurate injury information. And the pushback by coaches, I get back in the day where you didn't have social media and people tweeting out, oh, Davis Alexander isn't practicing. Nowadays, it's already out there. You have to do injury reports. why not just say, yeah, he's on the sixth game. We'll reevaluate then.
It's a great question. I don't get it. I used to deal with a coach who would tell you specifically which knee ligament it was, and he got this team to two Grey Cups. So, and it was Ken Miller, and the late great Ken Miller, he'd say, I'll give the other team the playbook if they ask me for it. I don't care. I know what plays are coming at me.
Yeah.
It's not like any defense is really running anything that we haven't seen before. It's all about the execution of the play. Did my guy make the right read on the way this DB set up to take the inside angle, or did he read it wrong and took the outside angle, and then the DB was able to cut it off for an interception? Like, these are all nuances and intricacies of football that you can – they all have the plays kind of written out on what they've seen on film, and they practice against it against scout team. But my goodness, the amount of, like, clutching the pearls of, oh, my God, we can't dare tell the Rough Riders that we're starting Cody Fajardo. Oh, that would give them way too big of an advantage. No, it wouldn't. You don't tell me Corey Mace doesn't already have a game plan, a book set aside for Cody Fajardo as opposed to Trey Ford. Like, and the injury information. So what if he's out for 6 weeks? Who cares? He's not playing anyways. It has no impact on anybody. And to just say, yeah, he's out this week. And hey, it's not just Jason Moss. Corey Mace does it too. Sometimes he sends some things like, ah, we'll see how it goes. And then he's on the 6-game injured list at the end of the week, right? Every coach does it in the CFL. NFL coaches will step to the podium, have a list, and go, this guy's out 2 to 3 weeks. We'll reevaluate with a knee injury. And they'll read their injury report to the media and go, okay, let's go. Like, not this, oh, well, TBD stuff. Speaking of an interesting injury that nobody really has a straight answer to, Chad Kelly and the Toronto Argonauts. He was going to be healthy at the start of the season. He was going to be healthy in week 4. We're looking for him in week 7. It's week 8. He's going back to Buffalo for more training stuff, leaving the team again this week. And then they go, well, maybe next week.
Yeah.
This is odd for the rehab of Chad Kelly in Toronto.
Unless he has a specific doctor he needs to see in Buffalo, why isn't he with the team? That's been my biggest thing, is you're the leader of that team. You were, a few short seasons ago, Chad Kelly was going to be the face of the CFL, let's be honest, after his MOP stuff, and then, of course, a bunch of off-field stuff happened, couldn't do it. But
yeah.
Why is he not with the team right now? A team that is struggling, a team he has to come back to and lead. Like I said, mate, if he needs a specific doctor down there, okay, fair enough, but I haven't seen anything that says that. That's the weirdest part of this to me, is why is he just kind of not even around the training facilities?
Yeah, it'll be Nick Arbuckle against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who will have Zach Collaros back. That's good news. Zach went down. He thought the hit was a bit late, which it kind of was. Didn't draw a penalty, though. But it's good that Zach wasn't out too long, that he was right back at practice that next week, which is good, because there's been far too many QB injuries. Nathan Rourke had one. Trevor had one. Zach had one. Chad's out. Davis Alexander. Drew Brown. Like, you go through, and what is it? Bo Levi Mitchell and Vernon Adams Jr. and Trey Ford. I think that's it for the guys who have started every game for their teams this year. A good percentage.
Nick Arbuckle has technically started every game for his team.
He's not the number one quarterback.
Well, right now he is. He's the only quarterback who's hanging around.
Out of the guys who would be QB1 on their depth chart. Let me come over there. Before we get to our picks, he wants the floor for the next 10 minutes, approximately, based on – you love lists. Britain loves lists. And loves criticizing lists. And Marshall Ferguson, you drew the ire of Britton Gray this week for having Nathan Rourke as the number one guy on the list for top Canadian in the CFL.
once again, I'll start with the list. First of all, Marshall missing two key ones, Nick Dembski and Damian Alford. Both those Canadians should be probably 1-2 with the season they're having, especially with the season Alford's having right now. I don't care. He's probably going to win most outstanding rookie. He can still win most outstanding Canadian. Just because you win one doesn't mean you can't win the other. Nathan Rourke, he has some stats behind it. Sure, I get the argument for him being in the conversation, but the stats he put up against the Riders was yards after beatdown. He's really, his best games have come both against the Edmonton Elks. He had to, I can't believe that the Montreal Alouettes lost and how the Lions managed to win that one. He is a second away from having a losing record as a quarterback this season. He's been good, but is he hasn't been special. He's been a good player who can do some special things. If people wanted to vote him the number one player in the league, as some people did, you need to see more from him so far. This is just not good enough for a guy who was supposed to be the face of the league, the guy who was supposed to be the best quarterback, because right now, fourth, fifth best quarterback in the CFL right now, when you look at everything.
Who's been the most, who has been the most outstanding, not most valuable Canadian? That's not the award. It's the most outstanding, because if it's most valuable Canadian, let's just hand it to Nathan Rourke every year he starts. Yeah. That, like, okay. Most outstanding season.
That is Alford.
He's not, he's not having an outstanding season. Like, Alford's burst onto the scene here. He's been outstanding. Cam Judge is up there in tackles this year. Adrian Green was on that list, too. He's tied for the league lead in interceptions. Who knows what Brady Oliveira's push is going to be as the season progresses, but the Nathan Rourke Canadian quarterback fan club in the CFL media, that's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. And I want Nathan to succeed. I want him to succeed.
Again, I know this gets back to Nathan Rourke and all these guys in Saskatchewan hate Nathan Rourke. We don't hate Nathan Rourke. We don't. We want him to be the face of the league. It would be so healthy if Nathan Rourke mm-hmm. was the face of the league. And everybody's trying so hard to make him the face of the league, as they kind of should and want him to be. We all dream of that as a Canadian quarterback, leading franchises to Grey Cup victories and being sensational. But when you're handing out awards and making lists, can we be honest? Like, can we be honest? Like, sorry to John Hodge at three down to take a shot at you again, but Nathan Rourke is the best CFL player. The best CFL player? Are you kidding me? He was the best guy? No, he wasn't deserving of the number one spot for the best CFL player. That was just lying to yourself. And he's the fifth best quarterback right now.
Yeah.
Like, he is. So Trevor Harris is above him. And I know. Well,
Vernon Adams, Davis Alexander's been better when he's been healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Bingo. So there you go. You got me started on it.
Hey, it's always interesting debates. I will give it that. Always an interesting debate.
Okay. Let's get to our picks here for Week 8 in the Canadian Football League. Britain just owned me last week. Just throttled me on the picks. But why did I pick BC? Anyways. Montreal at Calgary. Let's start there. I'm going Calgary because they haven't won a game yet with McLeod Bethel-Thompson, and it's in Calgary, and the Stampeders are the best team in the CFL. So Calgary gets my pick this week.
Everything you just said, I'm picking Calgary for those reasons.
Okay, moving right along. Winnipeg at Toronto. Winnipeg, of course, losing again to the Calgary Stampeders. Zach, I made this pick before I knew Zach was even practicing. Because I did like what Winnipeg did with Chris Streveler on a full week of practice as the starting quarterback. So I thought with him getting those first-team reps, they go into Toronto with a strong run game. And I think that strong run game will still pay off for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. against another week without Chad Kelly in Toronto. So I got Bombers on Saturday.
I am actually going to go with the Toronto Argonauts. I spoke about the Edmonton Elks being a desperate team. Right now, Toronto has some desperation behind them with how their season has gone. I get it's not Chad Kelly, but the Winnipeg does have to travel to Toronto. It is in Toronto. I like the Wynton McManus. We'll see what we're doing this before the depth chart's out, especially if he's playing. I'd like this defense to really answer the call this week because a team that needs to win. So I'll go a little bit different here. I'll go Toronto with this one.
Hamilton at BC wraps up the week on Sunday. I look at Tim White and Kenny Lawler after watching Trevor Harris throw for almost 400 yards against this secondary. Poof. I think Kenny Lawler might have a huge night against the BC Lions. I'm taking the Hamilton Tiger Cats out west against the Lions.
Yeah, that BC Lions defense struggles at times. And boy, the way Bo is slinging it right now. I like Hamilton. This is an interesting matchup when you look at who each of these teams have kind of beaten through this season. Both have beaten kind of the bottom feeders in their division. Hamilton's beaten Ottawa twice. BC's beaten Edmonton twice. They've beaten a Davis Alexander-less Montreal Alouettes.
Yeah, they both beat Montreal both times. McLeod Bethel Thompson was the quarterback.
And then Hamilton also has a win over Toronto in there as well without Chad Kelly. Yeah. So big statement game, I think, for both of those teams. I'm leaning Hamilton because, as I mentioned, that BC defense just gives up a ton this season.
And let's wrap it up with Britton Gray picking the Edmonton Elks this week. I know you want to. Just do it.
To.
Just say it. Just pick the Edmonton Elks.
I have the Riders in the Grey Cup. If you're a Grey Cup team, these are games you win. So I still lean the Riders, but it's going to be close. I have a 25-20 win for Saskatchewan.
So if you're saying if they lose to the Elks, they're not going to the Grey Cup?
That takes a big hit in that prediction if you lose to Edmonton.
We'll have to re-ask the confidence index if they lose to the Edmonton Elks next week.
I think I saw some people message, too, if they lose to Edmonton, they will also reconsider their Grey Cup pick.
They'll change their confidence in this team. I've got the Riders winning against the Edmonton Elks. I like what they put out against the BC Lions. They'll want to get one back after a disappointing effort last time out against the Calgary Stampeders at Mosaic Stadium. I think with Emelis back, that adds a huge boost to the receiving core and makes them even that much deeper. I am a little worried about another offensive line injury and the protection of Trevor Harris. And if he doesn't have that time, what can happen? But whether it's Cody, whether it's Trey, 32-18, the Saskatchewan Roughriders beat the Edmonton Elks at Mosaic Stadium on Friday Night Football. Britton, as always, make sure you like, you can subscribe, you can share, you can tell a friend all about it, and we'll be back next week to get you set for a game against the Montreal Alouettes for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, likely without Davis Alexander. And, of course, the Green Zone pregame show at 5. You talked to Mario Anderson Jr. for the profile piece.
Darius
this
Washington.
Week.
Talk to Darius Washington.
Or Darius Washington. Sorry. You will hear Mario Anderson, though, on the pregame show with an interview with Britton Gray. Not the profile, though. That's for the roster check. I just remembered.
And all or nothing
feature.
Yes, on the two dynamic wide receivers, Dont'a Myers, Keyshawn Johnson, who, when we look back, they were kind of just names on a press release back a few seasons ago, and now they're some of the best receivers in the CFL.
A lot of the best receivers in the CFL come on a just random February press release. Just here we go. They've signed blank, and then they turn into stars. So more on that with Britton Gray, of course. 5 o'clock Friday, the Green Zone pregame show, and it looks like it should be a smoke-free night. Fingers crossed. That kickoff is actually at 7 o'clock. Britton, have a good rest of your evening. And we'll see you on the Green Zone each and every weekday from 2 to 6.